Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 63, Lord Krishna fights with Banasura, texts 35 and 36. We'll do just 35. Word meanings, Nabihi, the navel, Nabaha, the sky, Agni, fire, Mukham, the face, Ambu, water, Retaha, the semen, Jhau, heaven, Shirsham, the head, Ashaha, the directions, Shrutihi, the sense of hearing, Angrihi, the foot, Urvi, the earth, Chandraha, the moon, Manaha, the mind, Yasya, whose, Drik, sight, Arkaha, the sun, Atma, self-awareness, Aham, I, Shiva, Samudraha, the ocean, Jataram, the abdomen, Bhuja, the arms, Indra. Nabir namognir mukham ambureto. Jashir shamasha shruti rangirurvi. Chandro mano yasya drigarka atma. Aham samudra jataram bhujendra. Nabir nabognir mukham ambureto. Dhyaur shirshamasha shrutirangirurvi. Chandra mano yasya drigarka atma. Aham samudra jataram bhujendra. Nabhir nabognir mukham ambureto. Jau shir shamasha shutirangirurvi. Chandra mano yasya drigarka atma. Aham samudra jataram bhujendra. Nabir nabognir mukham ambureto. Jau shirshamasha shrutirangirurvi. Chandra mano yasya drigarka atma. Aham samudra jataram bhujendra. Nabir nabognir mukham ambureto. Yasya samasya shrutirangirurvi. Chandra mano yasya drigarka atma. Aham samudra jataram bhujendra. Nabhir namognir mukham ambureto. Jashir shamasha shrutiram dhururvi. Chandra mano yasya drigarka atma. Aham samudra jataram bhujendra. Nabir namo bhir mukamam burito. Shashishma shashutiram guruji. Chandra mano yasya drigarta atma. Tam samudra jataram buddhindraha. And we can chant the second verse together. Romaniyasya shadayom buvaha kesha virincho dishana visargaha prajapatiridayam yasya dharma savai bhavan purusho lokakalpaha. Translation. This is Lord Shiva speaking to Lord Krishna. The sky is your navel, fire your face, water your semen, and heaven your head. The cardinal directions are your sense of hearing, herbal plants the hairs on your body, and water-bearing clouds the hair on your head. The earth is your foot, the moon your mind, and the sun your vision, while I am your ego. The ocean is your abdomen, Indra your arm, Lord Brahma your intelligence, the progenitor of mankind your genitals, and religion your heart. You are indeed the original Purusha, creator of the worlds. Report. Srila Sridhar Swami explains that just as the tiny bugs living inside a fruit cannot comprehend the fruit, so we living entities cannot understand the Supreme Absolute Truth in whom we exist. It is difficult to understand the cosmic manifestation of the Lord, what to speak of His transcendental form as Sri Krishna. Therefore, we should surrender in Krishna consciousness, and the Lord Himself will help us understand. Here we're seeing basically a description of the universal form, or parts of the universal form. There's a verse in the first canto, Narada Muni speaking to Vyasadev, Idam hi vishvam bhagavan ivetara, yato jagatstana nirodha sambhava. Probably would often quote the first line of this, Idam hi vishvam bhagavan ivetara. It means, this world is Bhagavan and not Bhagavan. Eva and Itara. It's different and it's also the same as Bhagavan. Well, that's in the fifth chapter. And then earlier than that, in the third chapter of the first canto, of course we have the list of all the incarnations of the Lord, not all of them, about 25 of them. And then there's a verse, Itarupam Bhagavato, Yarupasya Chiratmana. Maya gunair virachitam mahadari biratman. Says that the, so we're hearing about so many forms of the Lord, then it says the universal form of the Lord is not a real form of the Lord. It's because the Lord has no material form, but is presented so that we can get an idea that the Lord does have a form, that He's not formless. So if you think the Lord is formless, then think of this gigantic form, and at least you'll start getting a conception in your mind that God is not formless, that He has some kind of a form. Now, there's something else quite interesting in this same section, towards the end of the third chapter of the first canto. There's a verse there that describes that not only does the Lord have this gross material form, as we hear about in so many places in the Bhagavatam, but He also has a subtle form. Just as we have a gross body and a subtle body, the universal form is also a gross form and also a subtle form. And about that form, different things are said about it, but basically what's said about it is that it's unmanifest, indescribable, you can't see it, you can't hear it, but you can only realize it. So Prabhupada explains, and it's also, there's a couple of other verses in the second canto where it's referred to also. And It said there, Prabhupada says that this is something that the impersonalists like to meditate upon, this subtle form of the Lord. Now, it's not Krishna's spiritual form, but it's a subtle, universal form. And there again, it's described as indescribable. I was thinking how the impersonalists, they like to use this word. They have a term called anirvachaniya, anirvachaniya, which means indescribable. That's how they refer to the absolute truth, that it's indescribable. This reminds me of Prabhupada would sometimes say that they say it is zero, but then they can talk on and on and on about zero. So the same thing, it's indescribable, but they can spend so much time talking about it. So this sometimes the acharyas, they talk about the difference between this word, anirvachaniya, indescribable, and achintya. We say inconceivable. So we say, no, it's not that you can't describe him, but some of his descriptions are hard to conceive what they mean. But you can describe him. In other words, if you can't describe him, then what's the point of all the words of the Vedas? The Vedas are all about describing this so-called indescribable absolute truth, Brahman. Now here we're referring to Brahman especially. But this is not Brahman. This subtle aspect of the universal form is not Brahman, but it's a subtle universal form. So of course, the soul of the universal form is Vishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Then he has his subtle body and his gross body, just as we do. So some of the specific things that are referred to here by Lord Shiva, many of them come up in different descriptions. Actually, there's quite a few places where the universal form is referred to. Where it first comes up is in the second canto. It's quite interesting, the context of it. Because when Shukadeva Goswami begins speaking, first verse of the second canto, Shukadeva Goswami appears on the scene at the end of the first canto. He arrives there where Pariksit Maharaj has 7 days to live and he's fasting until death. And Shukadeva Goswami arrives and is given the seat of honor, the Vyasa Asan, to speak from. So when he speaks, of course, first of all, he glorifies Pariksit Maharaj's question. Pariksit has asked, what should one do at the time of death and at any time, especially at the time of death? And Shukadeva Goswami's answer, in a nutshell, is hear about, glorify, worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he says that one should meditate. One begins by meditating on the Supreme Lord. And he talks about, you know, going to a solitary place and sitting down and meditate, a typical description that we hear about a yogi who's going to meditate. And he says that one should meditate on the form of Vishnu, different parts of the Lord, and keeping the full form of Vishnu in his mind. And then when Pariksit Maharaj asks him, how exactly does one meditate on the Lord? Then Shukadeva Goswami describes meditation on the universal form of the Lord. So he kind of makes this switch. First he mentions meditating on Vishnu, the form of Vishnu. And when Pariksit asks him how to do it, he describes meditation on the form, on the universal form of the Lord. And Prabhupada explains in his purport, he seems to indicate that the reason that Shukadeva Goswami is doing this is because if one immediately tries to meditate on the form of Vishnu and practices yoga in that way, then one may fall into the trap of getting distracted by the opulences that one can accumulate, the 8 mystic siddhis. So in order to avoid that, Pariksit Maharaj is being told to meditate on the universal form of the Lord. If you're even more neophyte than a yogi, basically the idea is, if you're a complete materialist, and you might get distracted by the material opulences you can acquire by practicing yoga, then better to start here and meditating on the universal form of the Lord. That's the first place we hear about the universal form. And then in the creation, so as the description of the creation is unfolding, we hear about this Purusha, the Maha Purusha, which is really the universal form of the Lord and how he manifests in different ways. And in the third canto also, when Vidura and Maitreya are speaking, when Maitreya asks Vidura different questions, so he also begins by describing creation, and there again we hear about the universal form. And of course, we've heard about the universal form already in the Bhagavad Gita. You might say that's kind of a different, that's a real scary, frightening universal form of the Lord, but it is, because what Krishna is showing that he is the universe. He's the creator. Actually, at the end of this verse that we read today, after we hear these different descriptions of parts of the universal form, then Lord Shiva says, "You are indeed the original Purusha, creator of the worlds." So one reason we have the universal form described as Krishna or form of the Lord is because he has created it. This idea comes up in the writings of Jiva Goswami that, and in the Vedanta Sutra also, that the creator is present in his creation. That's basically the idea. We had this idea even materially, you can say, that a person, especially an artistic person, they become very attached to their creation sometimes because they put themselves into their work. They feel like, I put my heart into this, my musical creation or my painting or my sculpture or whatever it is. They feel that part of them is there. They're revealing themselves. Or a writer also, it's like writing is it's a hard thing to critique people's writing, which I have to do all the time, because it's a very sensitive thing. It's like, you know, I'm putting myself out there. I'm revealing something inside me, very personal. So, you know, people get very touchy about it. You say, well, there's something wrong with it. So in any case, the idea is that when you create something, then part of you is within that creation. So because Krishna is the creation, in one sense, because he's the creator, in one sense, he is the creation. So this comes out in these different descriptions of the creation that the devotees give in the Bhagavatam. And of course, we hear about other forms of the Lord, where times when Krishna reveals his universal form. One I had forgotten about, actually, is in the eighth canto, Lord Vamanadeva. When Vamanadeva takes his second step and fills up the universe, then he shows a universal form. We actually have a painting of that in the eighth canto. He has eight arms, at least the way it's depicted. It's described that he has eight arms and what each of the arms or each of the hands holds. And within that form, which is an eight-armed Vishnu form, basically, is the universe. The whole universe is there, different aspects of the universe. So in these different descriptions, we hear many of the things that we're hearing today also in this verse. For example, the sky. And of course, part of the whole qualification or qualities of these descriptions is that they're gigantic. You know, it's a gigantic universal form, the Virat, the Rupa. The Lord God is the universe. So the sky is described as his navel. So we can just, you know, what is the sky? The sky is everything we can see when we look up and around us. In fact, I was thinking, what do we mean when we say sky exactly? I looked it up in the dictionary. And it said that it's, you know, basically whatever we can see when we look up. The sky above us, where the birds fly and the planes fly and so on. But beyond that, where the stars are. We say the stars in the sky. So the sky is that immense, unlimited, practically speaking, space. We use the words interchangeably, sky and space. Now in Sanskrit, in this verse, we have the word nabho, nabha. Nabha means sky or space or ether. And we use the word ether, which to me is always interesting because the concept of space as one of the material elements, I think of space as, you know, the accommodating potency. That's how it's defined. Space is what you put something in. That's space. But then we think of space like outer space or sky. So to me, those two are different. But actually, the same Sanskrit words are used. Nabha, Akash, these are two of them. And they're used both for sky in our ordinary generic sense, you might say, and also the element of space or sky. So in any case, when we think of it, it's vast. Of course, space is everything. Everything is contained within space or a space, some kind of space. So then to hear that space is the navel of the universal form, well, it's so huge, it's unlimitedly huge. And it's just, you know, look at our navel. We have the term navel gazers. So but navel, what is it? It's the size of a dime, maybe, just a little tiny, compared to our whole body, how small it is. So to say that all of space is just the navel of the universal form, This is to help us conceive how huge he is. I was thinking you can play different games. You take one word like this, and actually Irmela did this. She wrote a series of articles. She went through the five material elements. She did earth, a meditation, fire, a meditation, air, a meditation, ether, a meditation. She did all of them. So she did some brainstorming. What are all the things you think of when you think of earth in relation to Krishna consciousness and Krishna's pastimes, for example? So sky, you think of sky. Well, what do we do? What do you think of when you think of sky and Krishna consciousness? Anybody have some suggestions when the word sky comes? First thing I thought of was, or sky or space. I thought of spaced out japa, but that's that's another meaning of space. Huh? Right, so when you think of sky, you think of ether, that comes to your mind. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if we're confusing it, though, because in the Sanskrit, it's the same thing. The word is used for both of them. It's used for sky and for space as that principle. Yes, Raghavendra. Trinavarta, that's a good one. And there's Vyomasura. I think Vyoma means sky, right? Vyoma means sky. So Vyomasura. Yeah, that's now. I was thinking of that song the kids had. Blue skies, white clouds, Krishna and Balaram. Actually, something interesting I read, I think it was by Jiva Goswami or Vishwanath Chakravarti. It was just Vishwanath Chakravarti in a commentary. He was giving an example. Krishna reveals the universal form because we can see it. Just like the deity, we can see it. So the sky, we think I'm seeing the sky because it's blue. But we're not actually seeing the sky. We're seeing blue. It's actually a different thing from the sky. The blue color is a different thing from the sky, but it's something that we can see. So anyway, he gave that analogy there. So similarly, you can see all these aspects of the universe. So in a sense, you're seeing Krishna. He's allowing you to see him in that way. Something else about the sky? Flowers. The demigods shower flowers from the sky. Yeah. Of what vastness of the sky? Yeah. All accommodating. Yes. Stita D. You're going to change the topic? Don't space us out here. Yeah, they take on, right, the same word. Even in English, you have the same word that may have many different meanings, so that's true. Yeah, the word Akash and Nabha, for example. Yes. Lord Indra is? Mm-hmm. Govardhan pastime. He's coming from the sky, you're saying? No, that's another thing, the demigods. Showering so many things from the sky, yeah. When we hear of the demigods, or even Narada Muni, there's in a very, very old BTG, someone wrote a poem about the transcendental spaceman, Narada Muni. You heard about the transcendental spaceman? So he travels through space, through the Akash somehow. I don't know if he just travels the way we think, like a rocket going through space. I think he travels in a different dimension somehow through space. The Akash Ganga. Uh-huh. So that's just the sky. Now, one thing about this list, actually the same one we're reading today, it tends to have the five Mahabhutas, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So here also we have sky, we can say that's ether. Water is the next one mentioned. Fire is mentioned, water is mentioned, and earth is mentioned. So we have, these are often mentioned in these lists because Panch Mahabhutas, they're really vast, just like the sky is vast. So all of the earth, that's another one. The planet Earth is called Earth, and then we have the earth element. And when Irmela was writing her article, I was, nitpicking on this, you know, what are these two different things? What exactly are we talking about here? When we talk about the earth element, can we talk about sand? And, you know, is that what we're talking about? It seems like it's more like it's a principle. It's a more subtle aspect of these things. So we can go on and on with these things. Maybe we'll do a little more, like fire. When I first think of fire, now fire is said to be the face of the universal form. So bright. Prabhupada said we're a bright face. We use the term fired up. We get bright face when we're fired up. The fire of Sankirtan. Illumination is there. Now Krishna is manifest in different kinds of fires. The fire of digestion. And it's said, now we've got the demigod Agni who represents fire. And there's a Vedic saying, Agni Sarva Devata. The Agni represents all the devas. And one reason for that is that because of the fire of sacrifice, he eats on behalf of all the devas and ultimately on behalf of Lord Vishnu. So anything about any other thoughts about fire, Krishna conscious thoughts? Raghavendra? Oh, the fire of ordeal. It burns away our anartas. All this. Shesha Prabhu.
I think of the universal form where fire is coming out of the mouth of some of
them. Yeah, in the Bhagavad Gita, certainly fire is prominent in Krishna's display of the universal form. Radha Damodar Prabhu. Krishna eats through the sacrificial fire. Yeah. Fire is one of the five material energies. Yeah. Madan Mohan Prabhu? Yeah, I was thinking of that. That Prabhupada sometimes when he talks about fire, he talks about electricity. Electricity is a form of fire. Because it's, you know, it's an energy. And of course you can heat with it, that's the other thing too. And if you touch it, it can burn, scorch you. The sun is a manifestation. Now the sun is listed here differently, but yeah, that I thought of that too. As soon as I thought of fire, I thought, well, we have this big fire, the sun. Right. In the creation of the universe. Right. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. One comes from the other. One is more subtle than the other. That's how we can understand how it's subtle. It manifests visibly when we do something and manipulate material elements and we see fire, but it's always there, actually present within the wood. Basically present with anything. You can burn anything if you have the high enough temperature. So, actually, I just wanted to mention a few other general comments. Now, I was thinking in this way, then we can, like I noticed myself when I was walking, Prabhupada so many times he talks about how it's so easy to see Krishna because Krishna says, I am the light of the sun. You drink water. Who doesn't drink water? He would always point this out. And I think, I drink water all the time and I don't remember Krishna most of the time. I'm the light of the sun and the moon. I'm always going out in the sun and I don't remember that. This morning I was walking and just because I was thinking of this class, I remembered, oh, there's a beautiful moon out. That's Krishna. Krishna is the moon. And I don't remember all of the 13 witnesses, but they may be included. I think the sun is included in the list. So, of course, Krishna is the super soul is one of those 13, so he's witnessing, but all other aspects, there are also aspects of Krishna. The directions, I know they're included in that list of 13. So you're always in the directions. You can't avoid that. In fact, when we were talking about sky, another one I was thinking of, it said that the four Kumaras are dressed only by the sky, or the direction sometimes it's said too, when they're naked. So that we have so many, that we actually have so many ways to help us. We can think of how Krishna is there and every aspect of the creation, everything we see. Because our tendency as neophytes is we want to close out everything because we see, when we see, we think of sense gratification. How can I enjoy what's there? So the training that Prabhupada was trying to give us was, no, instead of seeing in that way, see Krishna. How can you not see? Of course, Prabhupada's Mahabhagavat, when he's looking, he can only see Krishna. Prabhupada would sometimes say of the atheists, they say, we don't see Krishna anywhere, but the pure devotee sees him, Krishna, everywhere. He can only see him everywhere. You don't see him anywhere, we only see him everywhere. That's our training, to try to see him that way. So we have also another example of seeing Krishna or Krishna's representative in nature. You can say it's the Avadhuta Brahmana in the 11th canto, who had the 24 gurus. So when he was looking, when he saw the sky was teaching him something. When he saw the earth was teaching him something, spiritual lessons in this way. So we have the advantage to take advantage of all these training. What are we doing in Krishna consciousness? We're trying to train our consciousness to see Krishna everywhere. I could cover a couple of other examples I've forgotten about, the universal forms inside Krishna's mouth, of course, and Krishna's Leela. And we also have directly connected to Krishna's Leela, so many of these different things that are mentioned here. We have them, we can relate them to different aspects of Krishna consciousness in our philosophy. Then there's the whole side of analogies. There are so many analogies that Prabhupada used. Devotees have compiled them. I think there's a book where devotee compiled, and we have even in our indexes, we have an analogies section in our when we have a very elaborate indexes. So in these analogies, we have so many things that were related to nature. So we have that aspect, and then we have in Krishna Leela, so many these different forms are given there that relate to Krishna directly. Indra's in this list here. You are Indra, so Indra's in Krishna's Leela, of course, and Brahma. Prajapati is mentioned. Often Prajapati means Lord Brahma, but here it's because Brahma's already mentioned, it's translated as progenitor of mankind, so apparently that's Manu. Religion is his heart. One thing I came across here which one was it I was looking at? Maybe it was religion or the mind. The mind was mentioned? No. Anyway, I came across the idea that the mind is in the heart. I thought that was interesting because just intuitively, we tend to think that our mind is in our brain, isn't it? Because I think with my mind, so it's up here. I'm going to think, well, you know, scratch my head, whatever. And of course, we know the brain, that computer is up there, but somehow the mind is in the heart. Because, well, the mind is a subtle body. The subtle body is there in the heart with the soul. So someone asked me one time, where are the emotions? So I started thinking like that. Well, the mind thinks and feels and wills. So the emotions must be part of the mind. Right? And where's the mind? The mind is within the heart. That's where the emotions are also, in the mind. So all that is within the heart. And Krishna says that religion represents his heart. Now I thought, well, that's really nice because for us, religion, and for most people in general, religion is not so much in the mind, which is, of course, a part of what we do, but ultimately it comes down to the heart. It comes down to bhakti. Religion is bhakti. So bhakti is the heart of everything we do, the heart of our existence is bhakti. The essence of our existence is bhakti. And that's in represents the universal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna's heart. Well, this is something, of course, that can bring up lots of thoughts about Krishna. Well, it's a nice meditation that we're given here, thanks to Lord Shiva's prayer to Lord Krishna. Well, any questions, or anybody would like to add anything? Any more thoughts came to you?
I read somewhere that if one controls the mind, he controls all the senses.
Mm-hmm.
And I read elsewhere that if one controls the tongue, one can control all the senses. So I thought the mind was in the tongue.
I think that's an example of, sometimes Prabhupada would give, you know, we have, in other words, both are true. Because jivado, in other words, that's where that comes from. There's a sense that verse is sevon muke jivado. You begin serving Krishna with the tongue. And in the Vacho Vegam, Manasakaroda Vegam, that list says the guru is one who can control these six urges. So that list begins with the tongue, Vacho Vegam, especially speaking with the tongue. But then the mind is the chief sense. It's the sixth sense. And the others are considered subordinate to the mind. So that's why you can make that argument that you have to control the mind first. So either one of them, either way, it makes sense logically, one or the other. But no, I don't think the mind is in the tongue. It may seem that way. That all we're thinking about is our tongue. Yes.
We were talking about Krishna as fire. The common example which we all know is Holika Dahan. We perform this one day before the holy festival. The material energy is burnt, whereas the devotee of Krishna will not be burnt because he gets his Divya Shakti from the Krishna himself. So Krishna cannot destroy the devotee. That's what happened in Holika Dahan. Just I wanted to add for the
fire. Yeah, all of you may not be familiar with this pastime. I heard, you can correct me if I get it wrong, but the way I understand it, apparently it's popular in India to perform it. Holika was the sister of Prahlad Maharaj. And when Hiranyakashipu was trying to kill Prahlad, he had Holika take Prahlad into the fire. It's because I think she was given the benediction that she couldn't be burned. But she did get burned, and Prahlad didn't get burned. So the idea taken as an analogy is that the devotee will never be burned, but the Holika representing the material energy or the material desires, they will be consumed in the fire of Krishna consciousness. And then you have Prahlad who represents bhakti, and that's the idea.
Hare Krishna. So I was a bit surprised when you were saying heart and you're pointing to the material heart that we have.
Yeah.
And from Chakshus, the scriptures identify that jiva, the living entity, which is the 100,000 part of the tip of the hair, has a heart, and that has on the lotus of that heart is where Lord is residing. So we have to clean our consciousness to be able to see him. And of course, being the jiva, which is much more subtle than the subtle elements, it can enter into. So again, it can make that consciousness visible in our mind, intelligence, and false ego, and which being subtle resides in the gross body further, and that consciousness pervades and makes us this body act in the way the jiva decides to act on. Any comments on that?
I couldn't hear everything you said, but this is a tricky question about the heart. It's another one of those words that can mean different things.
Yes.
And sometimes it's explained literally in the heart, this
right.
physical organ. And in fact, I think it's Vishwanath again, or Jiva Goswami, who explains, because in the Bhagavatam, there's one place, in some places it says that the Paramatma is the size of the thumb.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen, I think this is from Jiva Goswami, where he says, that's relative to the size of the body. So the Paramatma within the heart of the ant is the size of the ant's thumb, if ants have thumbs, but how big the ant's thumb would be if it had a thumb. So because it has to fit, Paramatma has to fit within his tiny little heart. So that idea is there that it actually, but then there's an idea that there's more subtle heart, just like we use the word heart figuratively. Huh? We say, you know, I love you with all my heart. We don't mean it's physical organ. You know, here's my heart. We represent it with a Valentine. It kind of looks like a heart. But because we kind of put the two together, but what we really mean is our emotional core when we talk about it. So in that sense, you can say that the jiva, that's 1/10,000th the tip of a hair, which is also, that may be a metaphor, is present within that subtle, the most subtle aspect of ourselves, that's there. But it can also be within the material, you know, the material heart. So this is kind of a complex subject exactly about the heart.
Trivikram Prabhu. So
It stated that the subtle body is composed of the mind, the intelligence, false ego, and like that. And it's projecting from the heart, but it's stated that the subtle body projects through the body and is actually around your body, because it's subtler. It's not only. And Markandeya was speaking to Yudhishthira about this topic one time, and he said that, and your karma is registered on the subtle body. Hmm. So he says that the subtle body and the karma follows you like your shadow. And it's encased around the body. So in one sense, you could say the mind, even though it's projected, just like the Ganges is coming from the spiritual world, or it's coming from the head of Lord Shiva, but then it runs through Bharat, like that. But the source is, you could say, the spiritual world. So the source of the mind also is from the heart, but then it projects with the subtle body out of this physical body. But we have to have the eyes to see that.
When you talk about seeing, sometimes when you understand something, they say, oh, I see. Mm-hmm. So there's another type of seeing besides seeing with the eyes and seeing with vision, just like the words have different meanings too.
You see? Yeah, to understand. We see with the ears. We see by hearing. Yes.
About how different words can mean the same thing, yeah? Different meanings of the one word.
I'm having
different
trouble.
Different meanings of the same word.
Yes. Uh huh.
So I wanted to share something. If I understood, I'm not sure in English. That and in this context, would you say that space and cosmos mean the same? Space and cosmos. Would you say
space and what?
Cosmos. Cosmos.
Cosmos. Oh, cosmos. Well, usually cosmos means the universe, the created universe, the planets, and of course the space that the planets are in. I guess you can call that the cosmos. Yeah, the creation is another word for it. But space, generally we think of space as part of the cosmos. The planets are another part of the cosmos. So the planets and space together, I think, would be more what we would call the cosmos, those two together.
Because cosmic form was mentioned too, so cosmic form.
Cosmic form, yeah, Virat Rupa. Yeah, it's true, Prabhupada does use that word. It's Virat Rupa. Instead of universal form, the cosmic form. Yeah, they two mean the same thing. But even universe and cosmos, they're really synonymous. So the universe includes the space and everything within it. So in one sense, you have two different things. The space and the contents of the space, basically. So that's the cosmos, or that's the universe, those two taken together. But of course, in the universal form, the space or the sky is taken as one of the aspects of the universal form.
Well, I just wanted to say, in Croatian cosmos, when they translate cosmos, then they same as a space, they use the same word.
In the Sanskrit?
In my language.
In Croatian, your language.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They use the same word, but for sky, they use nebo, but they mean just this sky that we are looking at. They don't mean...
They don't mean outer space.
Yes, they don't
mean
that.
We tend to make that distinction also.
But I
the
just...
sky, although we do say the stars in the sky, and we mean really outer space, although we may be projecting it down into a plane just above us, just like when you do astrology, but see, it's actually three-dimensional. But you're talking about things moving across a two-dimensional background, really, which is always a little curious to me. I think, what's the significance of that? They're really billions of miles apart, maybe, in three dimensions, but we tend to think of them right next to each other. So I was thinking of that because the seven rishis, they're the Big Dipper. So I was thinking, well, I wonder how they're located in three dimensions with each other. From our perspective, it makes the shape of a dipper, but if you're on some other, if you're looking at it from another place, it may look like something different. So we have this kind of earth-centric view of the universe, and our astrology is actually taken in that way too. The influences are according to how we're aligned with what's up there projected in two dimensions. So anyway, I'm just elaborating on this idea of sky. When we say sky, maybe we're really not thinking of outer space. We're thinking of something closer, as our senses make us think that, no, this is just right up here, projected, just like if you go to a planetarium and everything is projected onto the ceiling. So we may see sky in that way as a kind of projection of what's actually way, way, way out there.
And I just wanted to share that in our language, the cosmos and the space, the word they use, because they try to make everything, our language centered. So they translate it as Svemir, which when you separate those two words means all peace, all peaceful.
That's the word, and it means both of those.
Yeah, all. When it's one word, but when you separate it, it means all peace, or the space, or
means all.
All peace, all, like peaceful.
Like peace, all peace.
All, you know, all like if you elaborate, it would be maybe all pervading peace.
Peace, like peace and war.
Yes, yes. I just wanted to share that. Croatian.
In Croatian language.
And I wasn't sure because I just wanted to say that when you say sky in English, it means space too, right?
Yes.
In our language, it's just this sky that you look at.
Yeah, that was what I was just talking about. It actually can mean both things, depending on the context. Yes. Elijah?
Related to the heart and the mind, I heard that the mind is, the heart is this, the mirror. The heart is the mirror of the mind.
Heart is a mirror of the mind.
I heard that.
Heart is a mirror of the mind. Chaito Darpanamarjanam. Yeah, I guess you could. That's a good way to look at it, because what if we're cleansing is our heart, you might say, more than our mind. I think we should stop here. It's getting late. Srila Prabhupada Gita.